You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. We really appreciate you tuning in. If this is your first time, welcome aboard. If you're coming back for more, great to see you. We hope you enjoy this week's episode. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the hot meatloaf sandwich to my frozen bologna sandwich, my dear friend Andy.
Oh, hey, what's up, man?
You know, Andy, I am L-I-V-I-N, because last week at this time, I was trapped on my parents' living room floor with my back thrown out.
Yeah.
So now I'm sitting upright, and I'm walking around on two legs. Like, you know.
Man, well, it's good to have you back.
A grizzly bear scratching his back, you know?
Yeah.
It's good to be back. It was a little bit of a scary moment. I did throw my back out like a very old man, and it brought me face to face with my own mortality.
Man, I had some old man shit this morning, too.
What happened?
All right. I took some medication on an empty stomach with a bunch of water after not eating anything, and I dropped my kid off at Nate's place like I do most mornings. And I was like, man, I feel like garbage, guys. I got to leave. And I got to about my car and just started throwing up everywhere. And I ended up puking out of the open door of my car in front of, like, most of Nate's family.
Was the family inside or were they outside?
Walking to school.
They were walking to school. Because it would be one thing to drop you off and your kids are inside. They can't hear anything. And they just look out and they see their father just puking all over himself silently.
No,
that would be traumatizing.
Not on myself. It was respectable. I've done my share of puking.
Okay.
It was all in the gutter.
Oh, you got it all out.
The best part was my son's story to everyone else was like, oh, yeah, my dad can't eat beef right now. And it's a real bummer because ribs are good.
Ribs are pork.
He said I can't eat ribs and I can't eat beef.
I think that's right. I think morning vomits preclude some heavy meats.
Yeah, I got real into that beef that morning.
Well, you also ruined silent partner Nate's children's morning. He's with us as he always is, making the sound happen and cleaning up the, like, power washing the vomit out of his driveway. So we appreciate him being here. This week's episode, we had from seminal Portland band Floater, Robert Winyu was in the house. So a great episode this week. Floater's been around since 1993. They're recent inductees into the Oregon Music Hall of Fame. They played with a lot of huge names from the Northwest, have a huge following themselves. It was a great honor to have Robert come hang out with us, and couldn't be a nicer, more interesting guy. Talked a lot about music, you know. We're just kicking our shit around music. Had some lot of interesting things to say about what process means to him, and kind of the balance between kind of chaos and rigor that it takes to write music. Played some interesting songs from the Portland area and just had a good time. Tried to think of some band names. So I think everybody's in for a big treat on this week's episode. And we hope that you enjoy our conversation with Robert Winyu on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
Get it. So you think legalized weed killed all weed jokes?
They're just not as, they just don't have the same teeth that they once used to have.
It really killed talking about weed for me. Because I used to just love to just talk about weed all the time. And now it's so lame.
Yeah.
If you go to a party and just talk about weed.
And you're always going to run into someone now who's like a grower or who has some sort of special technique. And you have to actually like learn something. And you're like, I don't really want to have this conversation. I just want to make some puns and move on.
You don't want tech talk.
No, I don't want to learn about your pump system and how organic it is. And I had this conversation recently, and actually the guy was extremely nice and extremely knowledgeable.
And I do want to know about your pump
system. But I really wanted to just, you know, fuck around and make some jokes, and I think that time has passed.
Right. Well, there's less magic with less taboo.
Exactly right.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. So you can make all kinds of dab jokes. Those are still hilarious.
Are dabs still taboo?
I don't know. I feel like even people who smoke a lot of weed are kind of scared of dabs.
Yeah, it's the butane torch. It's the crack pipiness of dabs that I think puts people off. Yeah,
it is. It is still pretty cracky. I mean, you can step around that. You can get an electric nail and you can have it all set up. And
fair.
If you want to invest a couple $100 into your bong.
No, I don't.
You can get rid of that blowtorch.
I don't. $2. That's what I want to invest.
Yeah.
In like some Indianapolis Colts stickers. That's what I want to invest.
If it starts requiring fancy equipment.
Yeah, I've made a mistake.
Asking questions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Robert, the first thing I want to say is, you know, congratulations. You're a recent inductee into the Oregon Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, man. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
October 2017, you guys got in. What is that like? Like, what does it feel like to be sort of indelibly marked as part of a region's culture?
Wow.
Maybe it feels like nothing.
No, it doesn't feel like nothing. It's so... I really, really didn't expect it at all.
And what is the process? How did this evolve and come about?
Well, so the way I understand it, it starts with the record stores, and they make nominees, and then the Hall of Fame has like a board of directors, I guess, and they bat around nominees based on the recommendation from the record stores. I think don't quote me on this because
there will be no fact checking on this episode. I can promise you that.
I feel so much better.
This will become gospel as soon as it's published.
So that's how I understand it to be, which may be flawed, but that's my understanding. And I just always associated it with people who were enormously longer lasting and more successful and better musicians. And, you know, and I think when I got this crazy phone call from Terry Currier, who owns Music Millennium.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you know, I know you have this new album out. Would you like to come down and play an album release, you know, thing, do a record signing at the store? And I said, yeah, Terry, that'd be great. Let's figure out a date. And he said, oh, and by the way, you should block off October on your calendar because we're going to induct you into the Oregon Music Hall of Fame. And I was like, why? I just couldn't believe it.
As a goof.
I thought he was just pulling my leg, you know, and the more it sunk in that it was real, the more I kind of just freaked out a little bit inside. Yeah.
Does it feel good to have that appreciation? Is it important to you to be recognized in some way?
No. It feels great. I don't know. You know, I'm struggling to find a good analogy for this. And the closest thing I can compare it to is it's kind of like if you're really happily married, mm-hmm. and somebody comes up and says, hey, so-and-so's girlfriend thinks you're hot.
Okay.
You know, you're like, well, that's cool. Like that. I mean, it feels good, right? That's a great feeling.
Yeah.
Is it your goal? No.
No.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of like a bologna sandwich in the freezer. Like, you know it's going to be all right, but you can't eat it right now because it's frozen.
That sounds a little bit like a stretch, I think.
Well,
that seems like a different kind of honor.
It didn't feel like Oregon a bologna Music sandwich in the freezer. But okay.
I'm saying a bologna sandwich is real good.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, you know.
Pick your own sandwich.
I think I've just consistently had, I get teased a lot by other musicians for this. I have an incredibly low expectations. I have very, whenever we say, hey, we're going to play a show and it sells out, I'm like, what? Every time. And I mean, I guess it just, I don't know. I'm not sure why that is. My upbringing, maybe? I don't know.
It's awesome. It would be shitty if you were like, what? The show didn't sell out? Fuck everyone. You know, that's the other side of it.
Yeah, you know, I run into that and I'm always a little baffled.
Yeah.
Because I think, how do you think that way? Do you take classes or how does that work?
Well, let's say you're playing a big room and only half of the tickets sell and you've got 250 people there. How could that ever be a bad thing? I mean, if, unless you're...
Fine, by me.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you are, you know...
I mean, financially it sucks.
Sure.
Like, that's the worst. But...
And the other side of things, if you're just rocking so fucking hard, you want everyone to see it. And if only half the people are there, it's not quite as good.
I mean, I guess. I mean, you've been doing this now for 24 years.
A lot of years.
Yeah. And so I suppose that there could be some disappointment if it's underwhelming. But I think it's great that you've maintained this perspective that, you know.
Well, I play a lot of shows and have from the very beginning. I've really always... done a lot of different projects. I do a lot of shows solo. I do shows under different names. I mean, even Floater, we've played a lot of shows around all over the West under different names as, you know, the opening band for other people or whatever.
Please tell us some of those names.
Well, we have kind of a grab bag of names, but, you know, usually it's just something from a movie. I think the last one was Dick Jones because of RoboCop, you know. Yes. Anyway, but, you know, we'll do shows under a different name or at the corner pub on a Tuesday night for very, very few people all the time because I just feel like...
That's a fucking move, dude.
Well, you're it's really important.
A small place under a different name. That gives me hope that I'm going to walk into a bar and see a fucking dope ass band. Just like basically.
Oh man, you will
in front of people.
You I walk into bars and see a killer band all the time.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that's the most frustrating to me about the movement away from physical social activity and towards screens by yourself is that, you know, the experience of seeing a play or seeing a band or being someplace where the art is actually happening physically in front of you, it there's no way. I mean, I hear people, it makes me cringe and throw up a little bit when people, oh, I've never seen you live, but I've seen YouTubes of, and I'm like, ugh.
Well, you know what drives me crazy is being behind someone at a show with their phone up like 80% of the time.
Yeah.
And you look around and everybody in the room is doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to capture that moment so you can maybe watch it sometime if you want
to. Never. I barely even look at pictures that I take of beautiful things.
If you got to capture the moment, I get it. Capture the moment, you know? Take a picture, do your selfie, like shoot a video of a half a verse or something like that. But I mean...
But then put it away.
Right? If you can't actually be there experiencing the thing that's happening, then, I mean, you're like, that's some Black Mirror shit where you're watching
exactly
the world.
Yeah, like a Black Mirror episode I just watched. It's fucking...
The weirdest example of this that I've experienced was I was in Vegas, where everything is like a hyper-reality to begin with.
Oh, the Black Mirror of America.
Basically. But they have all these casinos that have like a little like show outside, like the volcano blows up in front of whichever the fucking one. And people, it does this every half an hour. So people gather around this half an hour, and the entire time, 100% of them are just filming this thing that is supposed to be basically like, you know, a fraction of a Disneyland ride. It's just basically this cheap ploy to, you know, hey, all right, this is kind of cool. And I don't know. It's not a memory. It's not even an experience.
And besides the fact that, I mean, it's not like if you want to see the volcano blow up in front of the whatever hotel in Vegas, you can't just pull it up on YouTube anytime. I mean, not like your phone is going to capture the only episode of this ever.
Exactly.
Thank you. Somebody out there already took a better
video. You can relive that memory vicariously and it'll be exactly the same as your memory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we get too far down the road, I think we probably should play some music. I know that you brought some tunes to share.
I did.
What would you like to kick things off with this evening?
What do you guys... You have all of them?
Yeah.
We got them all.
Oh, okay.
All the songs.
Let's start. I remember one of them was a Druthers song. Mm. These guys, I just think the songwriting is amazing. The harmonies are... heartbreaking. I love watching this band live. And Erin Atkison, who's the female half of the duo, is responsible for a whole bunch of the vocals on my last record. And she's a incredible creative, just a typhoon of melody. She's amazing. And I love this song.
What's the name of the song?
I think I sent you... Which one did I send you guys from Druthers? Sorry, they have a lot of really good ones.
Oh, man. Let's see here. Was it Sweet Nothing?
Oh, Sweet Nothing. Yes, there you go.
All right. Well, let's check out Sweet Nothing by Druthers.
La 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 la
So that was some beautiful Druthers.
Oh, man, yeah. That's great. Yeah. That
Everything stuff. Druthers is beautiful.
I was saying during the song, that's one of those kind of, that's a style of music that exists out there in Portland that I never come across on my own. But I definitely want to seek that out because that was just pretty.
Yeah. I mean, when you stumble into a bar and they're the band that's playing, you just think, I have struck gold. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your first memory of attending a show? What was the first show, live music experience that like stuck with you?
Oh, that stuck. Well, my first memory of attending a live show. Let's see. I remember a lot of concerts from when I was very young. I'm trying to think of which is the thing that really stands out the most.
Linda Ronstadt.
No. I remember going to see The Who.
Jackal.
Oh, that's a pretty good
because
one.
I have a big brother who is years older than me and has amazing taste in music and was very accommodating about having a dorky little brother with him.
Yeah.
And he took me to see The Who at Memorial Coliseum.
Wow.
And I remember that very clearly. I remember the opening band. I remember watching them play. It was so staggeringly loud. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe that something this loud exists.
Yeah. Was that formative to you in terms of wanting to play music, or was there another artist that got you down the road?
Everything about The Who was formative to me.
Yeah.
I mean, really, there's nothing about The Who that doesn't somehow still to this day inform. I mean, I feel like I can't not look at things through a Who lens a little bit.
Pete Townsend, one of those musicians, incidentally, who, if you saw him when he was like 26 years old, you look like he looks like he's on the verge of death. But now that he's probably in his 60s, looks fantastic.
Yeah, Benjamin Button.
Yeah,
he's lucky man.
He's aged gracefully for a rock and roll star.
It turned out he was always an old man and just needed to fill out that old man frame over time.
Yeah, and especially in his face. He had a very sunken face. I mean, I'm sure there was some heavy drug use involved, but. He's done well for himself.
Maybe he
good
had
for you, Pete.
A curse cast on him that he would die until he played the guitar for like so many years. So every time he played the guitar, it gave him like a little bit more life.
Yeah, that's possible.
And that's just one thing that could have happened.
Yeah, well, you've opened a lot of doors for us, Andy.
Yeah,
freezer doors to eat sandwiches.
Yeah,
you've been on your game tonight. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
As far as other like sort of early influences, do you remember anything about like the first band you ever played in or the first shows that you ever played yourself?
The first band, well, that's hard because I'm not sure how you define a band. The first sort of project that I ever did, project is pretty loose. I had a friend in middle school and we had a reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Oh, nice.
And we would... His name was Lance. And Lance and I would record the ad copy from things that we read out of magazines as melodies. So we would look at an ad for like cigarettes or something and sing it and record that. And I don't know, I was probably 11.
Was it
or
just
so?
A cappella?
Yeah.
Melody?
Because, we didn't know how to do anything else.
Oh, that's amazing. You were writing like ads for the future, basically. You were training to be like, ads, like by Menon.
Yeah, jingles.
It was mostly because jingles. We found it sort of funny. So we would like liquor ads and things like that. We would read them and try to do it as like a kind of a Bon Jovi, spinoff or something. Nice. And when I first started actually writing my own stuff was similarly in middle school when I actually got my hands on some instruments, mm-hmm. and some of my friends also had instruments, and we would get together and try to learn other bands' songs and then experiment with writing our own, you know.
Well, it's interesting too, because I mean, this is probably a time when it was definitely a time when you didn't have access to like tabs and everything like that. You had to kind of cobble together with your ears. And I'm always just blown away by people who can do that. But it also probably helps you learn the instrument more, because as you're fumbling around, you're kind of figuring out your way around a guitar or around a bass or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Did it happen pretty quickly? Did you pick up, were you sort of musically inclined, or was it kind of a labor of love?
Definitely a labor of love. I mean, I don't know that I've ever been tremendously musically inclined. And the main reason I say that is because I know so many people that I work with on a regular basis who are so much more inherently talented than I am. And, you know, not, I don't mean that in a poor me kind of way. I just mean, I feel like I'm constantly working with people where, it just seems so easy and natural to them. And I feel like I'm pushing a boulder up a hill,
right?
You know, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, if you really love pushing boulders up hills, if that's right. how you get your jollies, then you just keep doing it, you know?
Well, I'm interested. Floater is a band that's been around for so long and was so, you guys were consistently touring, consistently writing. You have such a deep catalog. From your point of view, you know, what was the philosophy of the band when it got started? What were you trying to accomplish musically in 1993 when you guys were getting together?
Well, you know, I don't know if this is terribly accurate, because it's probably...
Can you say world domination?
Definitely not.
Oh, man.
No.
If it's not accurate, it becomes a folktale, which is also useful.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to speak for the other guys. I mean, I probably could, but I'm not gonna.
Well, I'll have a big surprise for you. They're all here.
That'd
be amazing.
I think the major motivation for me was that I was always hearing music that was not quite what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would go see a show, and I would, you know, I would go see like really heavy bands, and I would think, these guys are great and I love this, but I want more of a roller coaster. I don't, you know, I want to jump in the mosh pit and I want to fling myself around and get bloody and go crazy. But then I also kind of want to be able to go back and have a seat and just listen. And I kind of want everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that eclectic, all over the map factor seems, to me, it seemed like when I was, a lot of the band, you know, we were just talking about The Who,
mm-hmm.
Led Zeppelin, The Who, a lot of these bands in the 60s and 70s were completely free to do anything. They could make a country song. They could make a ballad. They could make a heavy metal tune.
They were encouraged to make Christmas albums.
They could make a Christmas album. They could make... But I mean, really, if you were in a band at that point in time, all you had to do was make something good.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if it was good, then your producer and the record label would go, great, and they would put it out, and that would be that. But we've slowly sort of eroded to this point where people feel like if it's... You know, they have a BPM. They go, well, if it's not, you know, we write songs that are 120 beats per minute. If it's 134, then it's starting to get into the panic territory. If it's 118, then it's starting to be too ballady. Or, I mean, you know, and I hear this kind of thing bandied about all the time. And I mean, I'm a radio listener. I make weird playlists and wild mixtapes, and I don't like the idea of a band having to just kick your ass for 60 minutes and then say goodnight and leave, and that's all they are allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I also am not really enamored with the idea of a band having to come out and lull you into a sweet dream for 60 minutes and then say goodnight and leave.
Yeah.
But I really want to be able to do it all. And I think if we formed Floater under any real umbrella, it was under no circumstance that we railed against the idea of having walls put around us.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, I mean, Sync, that first album is intentionally all the hell over the place. It's as
heavy. I was going to say, yeah, you can hear it right from the get-go.
Yeah.
The peaks and the valleys just sonically are all over the place.
It's as heavy and as pretty as we could manage with, you know, a very, very tiny budget and no time. I've continued to feel that way ever since.
Did you guys have any awareness in you know, 92, 93, when this is starting to percolate for Floater, that you were in this sort of transitionary period for rock music? Because it did seem like the 80s, there were a couple of sort of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, there was kind of cookie cutter rock and roll music. There was kind of the hair metal and that kind of stuff. And, you know, there were, you know, singer-songwriters like the Elvis Costello kind of thread, that kind of thing, new wave. And then there was, you know, sort of transition period into what grunge became and alternative became. And you guys were kind of sitting in that little area where change was happening. Was that at all palpable? Was that something you realized was happening? And did that at all contribute to your eclectic taste?
Or
am I just sort of like, is that revisionist history on my part?
No, absolutely. That, I mean,
All that is wrong.
That's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
No, I think that was absolutely the case. You know, bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, absolutely, Soundgarden grew out of the, I think, kind of universal desire to marry a lot of the really heavy, sludgy stuff that we were so into with the, you know, Fleetwood Mac that we had grown up on. Mm-hmm. And having heartfelt and memorable lyrics and melodies somehow be able to worm their way into something really heavy, I think, was the goal of the 90s. That seems like, if you really look back at that entire decade, it was a lot of musicians who grew up on really melodic music. You know, most of them grew up on James Taylor and Fleetwood Mac and, you know, the Bee Gees and whatever.
Really delicate, like intricate melodies.
Yeah, but who were really into Judas Priest and, you know, Kiss and whatever. And I think that desire to somehow find a way to make the super brutal, sludgy stuff that you really loved that appealed to all of your kind of young testosterone fueled madness with something that you could identify with and also sing along to.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of didn't exist before. You know, there was like the Carpenters and, you know, and I think just being able to kind of marry the music that you want to hear with the vocals that you can grasp.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense? Sorry.
No, I think it definitely makes sense. And I think it's almost something that is kind of taken for granted now, is because melody is being grafted onto every kind of sound you can imagine.
Right.
Including like some of the noisier experimental stuff. That's still a melody is something that people still latch onto and anchor to regardless of how the genres mutate. And you're talking about a time in rock music where it was, I think you're right. I think it's the timing of, and the age of the people at that time who had grown up on a certain kind of music, who were kind of pushing against, the heavier or toward the heavier stuff. I think it's an interesting, I mean, that's, for me, the way you encapsulated the 90s there is what I loved about that music.
Yeah.
For me, I was, you know, a teenager. I was a teenager during that decade, so I was very susceptible to whatever was going to be happening in music there, but that's exactly why it locked into me.
Yeah.
Was there a sense, being in the Northwest, where a lot of this stuff was really happening in a big way, did you feel like there was something going on there when you were inside of it? Does it feel like there was something big
Absolutely.
Happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's, I mean, still do, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been a bit of a Portland flag waver since my teens. And, yeah, I mean... I don't know. I feel bad for people who are elsewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
it's such a crazy golden age of independent film, playwrights. I mean, the 24-hour music festival or film festival. There's so much constantly. There's not one night a week, 365 days a year in this town that you can't go somewhere and see something that will rock your world, mm-hmm. that will make you want to go out and shoot a film or make an album or join a band or something. And I mean, you might have bad luck and get someplace where there's something really crappy going on, but
you can bounce back from that pretty easily.
Absolutely.
You have to roll those dice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, I do want to ask more about this, but I think we probably should play some tunes. Andy, maybe you've got a little something to spin for us.
Oh, yes, I am.
Ooh, what are you going to spin?
Play you a song.
A song?
By a band.
It's a good start.
From the town of Portland. As soon as I find my playlist, here we go. Oh, they're called Piss Test, and they're fantastic. They're a three-piece punk band, self-proclaimed snotty punk rock from
PDX. I believe you played some Piss Test on the show before.
I played Piss, Piss, Piss.
Oh, Piss, Piss, Piss. That was my
they're
Piss
a really
cubed.
Awesome grindcore band. This is Piss Test. This is just like straight-up punk rock. They're on an awesome label from Germany. Oh, I forget the fucking name. I'll look it up. Go to their fucking website. They're called Piss Test.
Anything like Planet Piss?
And they're currently on tour in Germany and Europe. Oh. So if you're listening to this there, go see them. This song is off of their LP. It's called Basement.
I still ain't Fleetwood Mac. I still dress all in black. I some patches on my pants. I still get crazy when I dance.
For that transition.
Yeah, I was hoping it would take a hard right there at the end.
So you can get that. That's actually off of their album LP2 from Piss Test out on Dirt Cult Records. And you can check those guys out if this comes out on time, January 26th.
No. Oh, fantastic.
At the Lalo Tavern.
Oh, great. Yeah, piss
they're
test.
Not on tour in Europe. I was fucking wrong. They should be.
That doesn't surprise me. Well, Robert, we were talking about kind of band names and you guys playing under different assumed names in the past. I'm wondering if you might be game to play a new little segment with us called Build a Band.
Build a Band. All
so
right,
the premise here is that we're going to give you a band title, a fictional band name, and we're all going to try to figure out what kind of music they should play. Like what's their what
a
their
fictional
sound
band
like.
Name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now here's a little warning to listeners out there is there are no unknown band names. Like there are no band names that don't exist.
Absolutely not.
So we've probably stumbled upon a real band out there. We didn't do any even a cursory Google search for any of these.
No.
So let's
but these are just off the dome.
These are right off the dome piece, and if we're insulting you and your real band in any way, or,
get used to it.
Yeah, but yes. By the way, get used to it. But you can also write us. You can write Andy, Nate, and I at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com, and you can
let me tell you
how
if
great
you
your
can't
band
take
is.
A bad review, or somebody making fun of you,
or someone making fun of a fictional version of you,
get out of the fucking kitchen.
Exactly. It's not really meant to insult.
Maybe we're right.
I will make it my business to insult as many as I can.
But so, if you nail it, they have to send you their firstborn. And you don't really want that either.
Oh,
I
no.
don't. I do not
no,
want
no
that.
No, thank you.
Remember when that was a thing? When people wanted your firstborn?
Yeah, I think it was a different era.
I guess those were kind of like
wait,
demons.
Wait, do you
like
remember that?
No, I'm not immortal. I'm kidding.
Okay, here is the first one, the first band that we're gonna help build. The band's name is Hot Jogger.
Oh, yeah. Hot Jogger?
Yeah.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, it is kind of gross.
I mean, it just sounds sweaty.
It does sound sweaty.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, personally, I hear like bedroom noise core. Like one person taking on the moniker Hot Jogger, making almost impenetrably dense and nauseating noise.
Nice.
I feel like you would have to be a New York art project.
Okay.
With a name like that.
Like some kind of wave, like real synthy,
like dreamy. One of those sort of, you know, Warhol studio kind of.
Yeah.
The kind of bands where everyone stands like bolt upright and doesn't move.
Or you're like a German experimental band and you just picked American words.
Yeah. Hot Jogger.
We're a Hot Jogger.
It's just like some real
that
deep,
would be incredible.
Like, kraut rock. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think the art band is my favorite Hot Jogger, but
I would love to hear like a band that was heavily inspired by Kraftwerk called Hot Jogger.
Hot Jogger. Yeah.
Or
with an umlaut.
Einsters and Neubauten. You know, just a full on noise.
Nitzer Ebb.
Yeah.
Are these real bands?
Yeah.
Okay. The next band that we'll attempt to dissect here, Prisoners of Winter.
Well, that sounds like a...
That's a metal band.
Band name generator thing.
Yeah. But what kind of band? You think it's definitely metal? Because I hear like a... I could see here like a Moody Blues kind of just like flute rock.
I don't know. That sounds like doom to fantasy metal.
Prisoner of Winter or a concept band that tells long epic stories.
I think Prisoners of Winter is a couple. It's a guy and his wife, and they are an acoustic folk duo.
Yeah, one plays glockenspiel.
Who made an entire album on a 4-track recorder while snowed in a cabin.
Oh. Ooh,
and this is nice. after they wrote and recorded and mixed all of the songs on the 4-track, they killed and ate each other.
Yeah. The wife survived.
So the tape is discovered, Prisoners of Winter, and it's just these like sort of beautiful two-piece melodic acoustic folk duo songs. That's my guess.
After he died, she played his rib bones.
I don't know how they killed and ate each other. I just am leaving that to your imagination.
Right. It's all there. It's all there in the music.
I'm not leaving it to your imagination. She played his ribs like a dulcimer.
Okay. I think it's fantastic. I think that's great. I love that. I want to hear this. I want to hear some of that.
It's real deep.
The next band is the Steve Miller Band. Just kidding.
Just
no one
real,
would ever name themselves
that'd
that.
That'd be real groovy.
Let's see. Another one I thought of was the band Waxy, Now it's going to be spelled W-A-X-X-Y or excuse me, W-A-X-X-I-E or W-A-capital-X-X-X-Y.
That's much more Googleable. I would go with the...
Sexy Waxy?
With the triple X.
Waxy? Is it just like vulgar dance?
It sounds very hip-hoppy to me.
Yeah, I could see hip-hop.
Yeah.
What style like of hip-hop?
Mumblecore.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. I was thinking more Southern. Just real crunkin'.
Oh, that could be. It could be. It could be that new breed of MC that only smokes wax. And he calls himself Waxy. And he's really into fucking on wax. So he has like the three axes in there because he makes like these weird pornos where he does like these dabs. And I've gone completely off the rails.
No, you really sunk your teeth into this game. I think we've gotten our money's worth on this one. Operator. Okay, the last one before we play a little bit more music. How about Cool Kevin with a K? Cool Kevin.
Cool with a K?
Cool with a K, Kevin.
So two Ks.
Yeah.
Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
Cool, Kevin.
There's nothing that's cool about it, and it makes me sad.
So we're discouraging Cool Kevin's career.
I feel like I see a terrible, tragic photo of an uncomfortable-looking gentleman in like a tracksuit.
He is an agoraphobic quadriplegic.
Oh,
and he really needs a lot.
It's even sadder.
He needs some more support. You know, he obviously doesn't get out a lot. Yeah. And he's really putting himself out there. And we're really just shitting all over him. That was the real one. Well, no, I'm kidding. That wasn't the real one.
I feel dirty.
Sorry, Kevin.
I know. But Kevin, I do feel bad, but give it up.
That's a shitty name.
Yeah,
Kevin.
Walk away, Kevin. Yeah. Just rejust name yourself. Just do something better.
This is probably the one band that is real.
It's him and a Casio and a lot of tragedy.
Yeah.
A hard way to go out.
It could be great. It could be great. I'm just going to throw out there, Kevin, if you're listening, there is potential for it to be really fantastic.
I think, Robbie, you can take us out of this tailspin by playing a little music. What's the second song you'd like to share this evening?
Oh, man. Red Fang.
Yeah.
Any Red Fangs fans?
Oh, yeah. This is my first Portland band. This is the first band I saw live when I moved here.
Fantastic.
11 years ago.
You have done well.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked out and saw Red Fang when they were just doing just a string of free shows throughout Portland.
Like, yeah, I saw them for free too. It was amazing.
9 years ago. It was
so
fantastic.
This song is off the album Murder the Mountain that my buddy Chris Funk produced, and I'm fantastically proud of him. He did an incredible job with the production on it, and I love these guys, and it's nothing like the Druthers, but it's fantastic in every way.
Good. Is there a particular song you wanted to play?
What did I send you guys, Wire?
I think you said The Undertow.
Oh, Undertow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Killer. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, play The Undertow.
It's a hot jam.
That's good.
It's the hot jam. What was it like for you guys playing with the band? You know, you guys played with like Nirvana and Suicidal Tendencies, and you know, what was it like being part of that world and having a chance to play with some of those bands?
You know, honestly, most of the experiences that I've had with bands that are really famous have been kind of non-experiences.
Really?
In general, yeah. Usually they have, you know, security and,
yeah,
you know, and they don't have much to do with anybody else.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah. The most exciting and electric experiences for me have generally been with other bands that are younger and more unknown and a little less jaded
and less guarded. Yeah.
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 What's do you have like a memorable tour experience, a favorite tour experience?
Oh my God. I don't know how I could have one favorite tour experience. I mean, that's just so many. I don't know.
Yeah, that's hard to narrow down.
It is, yeah. It's a lot.
What do you like most about the experience of touring?
What I like most? The actual music making. Hmm. Absolutely, yeah. There's a famous quote. Oh, God. Is it Johnny Cash?
Oh, maybe, man. Johnny Cash, or maybe
now I can't
Johnny
remember.
Depp.
It's a famous quote that life on tour in a band is 1 hour a day of the best day of your life and 23 hours of the worst.
Yeah,
and that seems like that's what it that sums it up pretty well. It's generally pretty awful the vast majority of the time,
mm-hmm.
followed by these spikes of like the greatest moment ever.
What's the longest you guys were ever out on the road consecutively?
You know, we've been really lucky in that we haven't really had more than about 2.5-3 months of like solid just gigs.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know a lot of bands that have done 18 months or whatever, you know, just nonstop. And we've really pretty much capped out around a month or so.
That seems like the right amount. That seems like the point at which you want to kill everybody, but before you kill everybody.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ideally. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I'm curious about too, just having had such a kind of a long and successful and sustained career, what would you say has changed most about your approach to making music in the last 25 years that you've been doing this?
Oh man, that's a great question. Boy. What has changed the most? I mean, this is going to sound terrible, but
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell has not changed even
right.
a little bit.
You're right; it hasn't changed.
They
much.
Are an absolute constant. I think probably what has changed the most is for me is all technical. In that, you know, when I started out, I really didn't have any idea how anything worked. and it was all just a sort of weird mystery of, you know, how do you record? How do you, you know?
Yeah.
And at this point, I mean, I have a record label and I'm my own studio and I don't, have a lot of, questions about
yeah.
like the technical stuff. So that is maybe not the most sexy answer, but I think that's probably the biggest change.
Sexy. It's real sexy.
Has that? Yeah, people can't see how sexy it is. Unfortunately, it's an audio medium, but it is. It's palpably sexy. Does that kind of knowledge and that confidence? Does that impact your songwriting at all? Having that technology up your sleeve and knowing that you can execute, does that impact the way that you write a song or the things that you try to do musically?
I mean, I I want to say no, it doesn't, because it doesn't feel like it does.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, I guess it kind of has to.
Yeah.
I'm hard pressed to really put a finger on how that does affect songwriting, it must.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, you know, the sound of uncompressed vocal track versus a compressed vocal track is worlds apart.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that makes you approach vocals differently.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can just kind of expand that into everything else, you know.
How have your ambitions changed in the time you've been a musician? Have your goals or the things that you're driving toward evolved, changed?
And also, what's your favorite sandwich?
What's my favorite sandwich, and how have my ambitions changed?
Both difficult questions to answer.
Yeah. Super hard. Take that.
Well, and also because I think the answer to both depends on when you ask.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, first thing in the morning, favorite sandwich is a breakfast sandwich.
It's true.
Yeah. How have my ambitions changed? If you ask me 3 weeks into a tour somewhere totally punk-ass broke and hoping I can find a shower, I would be like, I wish I'd made more commercial stuff, you know, so I had like 10 cents. But if you ask me right now, you know, sitting here in Southeast in my neighborhood, comfortably chatting with you fellas, mm-hmm. different story. You know, Grand Central?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They make a, what's it called? They make this sandwich. It's on like a crostini, and it has like a smoked mozzarella and avocado and roasted red peppers.
What?
It's a right veggie now. Sandwich, but it's just mm-hmm. so smoking crazy good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, nice. Shout out to Grand Central.
Yeah.
That sounds real good, dude.
That's probably my favorite sandwich.
That's a huge,
right now.
Yeah.
I'm really loving that sandwich.
Right on.
That's a good one. It's a strong sandwich.
Mm-hmm. My current favorite sandwich in town is probably Shut Up and Eat's cheesesteak.
Mm, all right.
A solid cheesesteak. It's a Shut Up and Eat.
All I can think about right now is a PBJ with the crust cut off.
Oh, man.
It's not even my favorite sandwich, but it sounds delicious to me. Right now.
I want extra crust. I just want the.
I don't even mind the crust. I'm just thinking about it right now.
Give me the heels. Mm-hmm. What if that? I'm gonna open that cart. I make sandwiches, but it's just with the ends of the bread.
Just the heels. The stuff people have been throwing away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think the ambition question, probably the best way to answer that is that when you first start out, your ambitions are obviously a whole lot lower because. When you first start out, you're thinking, oh my God, it would be so great just to make a record.
Mm-hmm.
Like just that's it, you know? But just to make a record now to me would be like, what are you like? That's all.
Yeah. It's table stakes now.
Come on now.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to do something more than just put something out, you mm-hmm. know? And I think that's a long, progression to sort of work your way through because you have it makes sense mm-hmm. the first time to say, you know, oh my God, we should do a podcast or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the first thing is going to be this amazing thing, but then, you know, eventually over time you start saying, oh, wouldn't it be, you know, what if, and hopefully it grows and matures and improves. And
you can put that bologna sandwich in the freezer for later.
Mm-hmm. So to speak. Mm-hmm. When you were at year like 8 of Floater and you're kind of in the middle, you don't have that first energy of a new band and you don't have quite yet this vantage point that you're speaking from now, you know, what did you do to kind of propel through sort of that middle period? Did it ever feel that way or was there ever a time when you thought about giving it up?
Oh my God, yeah. Tons.
every other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have completely given it up so many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Cold turkey.
So many times. It's like, you know, I'm sure there are smokers out there that can totally relate, you know, to the whole, yeah, I've quit smoking mm-hmm. 38 times.
Yeah.
And every time I'm like, God damn it. That's it. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I've definitely reached that conclusion and then come back and then reached it and come back. And now I'm like, don't kid yourself.
Yeah. Now you can't even pretend yeah. to want to give it yeah. up. Well, this is a rare thing. I'm going to play a little music. Usually I leave it to the professionals, but I came across a song. And again, this could be embarrassing because everyone might've heard this song already.
It's 311 down.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's great.
Now 311 is legitimately one of my favorite bands, but it's not a 311 song. This is actually a song that I think would be a sweet cruising jam for the summer, but I'll definitely forget about it in summertime, so I want to give it to
I'm
people.
I'm noticing that that's one of your music categories is sweet cruising songs.
Cruising music, just like a chill it. Jam in the summertime. Yeah, well, it's not super slow, just like it's just chill.
And Blink-182.
This is by a hip-hop duo from Los Angeles called Tehran and IMRA. They put an album out called Wet last year. It's awesome. And this is a song called It's a Trip. And it's just a really kind of fun hip hop song with a stone groove as a beat. So I think it's a good chill song. I think it'll get stuck in your head. So let's check it out. So that was Tehran and IMRA.
Nice, man. It's a trip. That is a nice summer.
Yeah, just jam. Like a, like, yeah, it. Exactly. That's a quiet, windows down kind of jam.
That's a weird way to describe it. Yeah, just keep it quiet. But put the
well, you
down.
Know, it's like I'm being quiet. I'm not really going to be like singing along. I'm a big singer when I'm driving in my car. But that kind of that song, I just want wind blowing.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
I'm a big singer driving in my car too.
Yeah.
Yeah, much to my family's chagrin.
Yeah, it's pretty constant for me. I'm not really too embarrassed about it. I can't help it. I'm a big singer in my office, at work, those kinds of things. Yeah, it's pretty constant.
That's good.
Yeah.
You go on with your bad self.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the courage to continue.
I mean, why not?
So we're almost out of time. I want to ask you really quickly, if you could play a different genre of music than the one you do. What would that be?
What genre do I play?
That's a good question. I don't have necessarily an answer for that.
I'm asking you because I don't know.
I was listening back to. I mean, you have a lot of albums as Floater, and so I went back to Sync and listened to that, and tried, and then I listened to, I guess, Wake, which was one of the more recent ones.
Yeah, there you go.
And tried to see. You guys have been pretty consistent, but I couldn't quite put my finger on exactly what it sounds like. I was trying to think of bands that sound similar, and I was coming up a little bit short. Do you know the song that's a Boston band? I can't remember their name. Wait. They did the song Three Strange Days. Do you know that song? Three strange days. There was something about a couple parts of Sync that reminded me of that song.
Huh.
I'll look up who that is because I can't recall who that is. But that was a very 90s band, and there was something that sort of lined up there. But that was like the closest I could get to pinning it down.
Yeah.
Have you ever had sort of a shorthand for what you describe Floater as to other people?
The best shorthand that I've ever had is rock and roll. I mean, I just, you know, people, what's your band like? Rock. We're a rock band. And that's about it.
Yeah.
I think as soon as I start trying to put other words on it, it's
skunky,
gets less
funky,
accurate.
Punky, rocky, rocky. Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Rock and roll is solid. You're right.
Well, I'm always curious. Sometimes people, well, this is what I assume, and I've often been proven wrong, but I always thought to myself, okay, maybe it's useful if you decide as a band what kind of like your shorthand is for your style. And then if you're ever in a jam writing a song that isn't going where you want it to go, you have some kind of shorthand you can fall back on. Did you guys ever have anything like that? Any concept that you could return to that was central to the band?
No.
No? Okay.
No. See? But I absolutely agree. I mean, I think in so many ways for bands all over the place, life is just clearly so much easier if you can say, you know, we're a heavy metal band.
Right.
And then, you know, that's what you do, right? I see it all the time. And you can get a booking agent and you can get management and you can get, you know, and you have a certain draw and you know what your artwork is going to look like. And, you know, because you just like, boom, it's everything's done. It's baked in. If you're kind of saying to yourself, I don't know, you know, all doors are open.
Yeah.
Then it's very hard to know what your next move is because you're just feeling it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always just kind of saying, well, what feels like it should be next? And that's very gray and flexible.
Yeah, it's true.
What would you say? Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm very curious by this concept. What was the songwriting process like? Did you guys jam things into existence? Did one person have more responsibility than others? What was the dynamic like?
You know,
there?
We honestly, I have just never had a songwriting process.
Mm-hmm.
I really would love one. It's been a goal for many years, and I've just never been able to. I mean, it's like, I'm going to learn Japanese one of these days, you know? And I don't know, it's so different every time. And
it's exactly how I feel about Kratom. I'm like, fucking one of these days I'm going to stop at that store and buy some of that legal kratom and just fucking puff tough. But I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your Japanese.
It's an unreachable
that's
goal.
My learning Japanese. I mean, I could, but, you know, I won't.
So was it
started to derail that conversation?
Oh well, you know that is your function. We can bounce back from almost anything, as we've seen. So were songs written together or separately?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, both. Yeah,
all of them.
I have always and continue to. I sometimes I'll come in and be like, this is the whole thing. You know, and then sometimes it's completely just let's see what's in the air at the moment. And you're just making it up, you know. And I don't like to put a governor on, you know, well, we have to do it all together or, you know, or. You know what I mean?
With the governor, fuck him.
I mean, you really want to be able to leave every option open. And that certainly makes it more tricky, but it doesn't shut doors that you would otherwise miss, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you hope happens in your musical life in the next 10 years?
In the next 10 years?
World domination.
Yeah. World domination. Nice. No.
I mean, like, do it, but be nice.
No, I don't have any desire to dominate the world.
Benevolent dictatorship.
Yeah.
I don't even have a desire to be a benevolent dictator. No.
No.
No, thank you.
I'll pass on benevolence.
It just sounds
fuck all
exhausting. next 10 years, I would like to make, I think there's a sort of a chasing the dragon, you know, pursuit of
heroin
the impossible
addiction.
High that is... I don't know if every musician feels like this, but I feel like most of us do in that a lot of what you do is just short of your own mark.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a great while, you have this sort of magical, you know, just that's the heroine moment of, oh my God, that's exactly on the mark. And it's not, you know, near it, it's right there. And you just get goosebumps and the pursuit of those moments, I think you don't know the first time that that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you realize it's a thing, you just start chasing it. And you're always trying to kind of get it right. And I hope in the next 10 years, I can really maximize my ability to get it right.
Yeah. Is it something that you, I mean, it's always going to be rare, right? Those moments are always going to be...
It sure feels like it,
in the minority. Is there anything you can do to kind of control getting closer and closer to that?
Well, you know, so this is the trick, right? is that it's like a two-part recipe. And on the one hand, you have craft, which I know you guys have talked about on the show before, but... you know, learning doing the actual work and learning the, you know, how to shape a chord progression to a melody and how to move gracefully from a chorus into a bridge and things like that they're laughably dumb concepts kind of in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you move along, you start thinking like, okay, how can I do this? And so on the one hand, there's all this craft that is part of the recipe. And on the other hand, if you don't have chaos, if you don't sort of throw craft away and just leave yourself open to anything that might work in the moment outside, you know, coloring outside the lines, then you're not really making art. You're mm-hmm. kind of making science.
Right.
And so that really stops you from being able to say, this is how to do it. Because you know, you want to perfect the craft, but you have to have that level of insanity or you're not really doing what you want to do.
It's possible that the goosebumps moment you described is when those two sides are in perfect balance. You know, it's when there's maybe the right combination of, you know, you're taking some conscious steps to get at something that's possible. And then you're finding all this possibility that meets you head on. I mean, those are the things for me. I mean, I'm becoming more of a musician, kind of a little bit late to the game. But as I learn, I feel like I'm always against what's possible. And when I break through, there's this little bit of time when I can do a little bit more than I used to, and I have control of all the things that I used to have control of. So there's this new area of opportunity.
I'm doing the opposite, where I'm becoming even less of a musician than I ever was. I've never been one.
You're getting a metronome and purposely I'm being off the beat.
I'm just distancing myself from any kind of rhythm and any kind of learning of rhythm. And now I'm just being a really harsh critic.
But I am musicians. I love this stuff. I love that balance that you're talking about.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I think, you know, and I think other people can hear it when you play something for a room full of people where that balance is struck. I think that sounds right to them too.
Yeah, it just feels like an unending, you know, beyond the horizon tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
And you're walking the tightrope, and you know that you'll never actually get off of it. You're just, that's life, and
that's exactly.
And then
right.
on the you know on one side of it is craft, and on the other side is chaos, and you're
and on the other side is DMT.
But so you know you find yourself just constantly. I guess that applies to everything.
No,
really.
I thought that was a great metaphor.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's this combination of there's a little bit of discomfort and a little bit of wisdom that you accumulate with each step. And you also, there's a
zen in just giving up the idea of thinking this is going to be easy and I'm going to know how to just walk along.
Yeah.
You know, that you when you accept that you will be trying to keep your balance on this weird tightrope, then you just can find the joy in trying to find that weird balance. And most of the most creative people that I work with that I, you know, the filmmakers and musicians and stuff, it seems like they have a fairly, they're comfortable with that wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that imbalance it's that the swerving hula hoop move, right. You know, is it works fluidly.
Well, I think that we would risk really derailing things entirely if we didn't go out right there, because I think that's a nice little piece of wisdom for us. We do have time for one more song. I know you brought one more track to share with us, Rob.
What's the third?
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Well, tell us a little bit about this.
You
asked me to bring something of mine, and I
buried the lead here.
Well, so this is from my recent album, Brave the Strange, and it is not a radio sort of tune.
It's 17 minutes long.
No, I don't think it's like terribly long, but it's definitely not, you know, the single.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a very special place in my heart for this particular song. It means a lot to me, so that's why I brought it. Scraps now.
I'm sleeping rough. Got a ration of passion. I gotta make it enough. Is anyone home? Is anyone home? Is anyone home? Is anyone home?
It was amazing.
That guy.
That's great.
Wow.
A perfect example of our genre thing, our genre conversation, because I have no idea what that was, but it was pretty.
I don't either.
Yeah. It was great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing and shooting the breeze with us.
Thank you.
We really,
for
really appreciate
me.
It. What's the best way people can kind of keep track of what you're up to if they want to listen to some more?
Oh, man. They can look for me, Robert Winia. They can look for Floater. That's easy.
That's out there. Yeah.
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 Absolutely. They can look at Typhon Records, Typhon. Any of those on all of the social stuff.
Great. And it's like, do the searching, everybody, because it's a bottomless well, and you'll just, like, there's more. There's always more.
Yeah.
I'm just scratching the surface. So it's definitely worth your time. It's interesting music. I mean, I couldn't put a finger on it, and I hope for everyone listening to this conversation.
Wait till the new one comes out.
Yeah, I'm excited. What's the release date for that? That's always an imprecise term, but
yeah, it's going to be in the spring/summer.
All right,
it'll come out, and yeah.
Well, we'll be sure to let our listeners.
I'm in rough mixing stages right now, and it's I'm giddy. It's very exciting.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm very excited for that. So we'll be sure to let our listeners know, and I'll be a first in line for that. Thank you again. We really appreciate you being here, Robert.
Thanks for coming on the
thanks
show.
Thanks for having me.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And thank all of you for listening to this week's episode of Hot Garbage. We greatly appreciate it. If this is your first visit to the garage with us, we hope you come back and we hope you had a good time. If you're returning, it's great to see you and we appreciate you listening. If you'd like to reach out to Nate, Andy, and me, you can do so via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE Garbage Podcast. Andy. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for you to play us on out this evening. What do you got?
I got beats for your asses.
All right, drop it.
This is Shamana, S-H-A-M-A-N-A, out of Cleveland, Ohio. This is some experimental, he calls himself post-ASMR.
I don't even know what that means.
Lo-fi hip-hop beats, and this fucking shit bangs. Get this shit right now if you're a fan of beat music. You need to check this out. This is off of his album from a couple of years ago called Been Here. This is called 100 Racks.
All right. Well, for Robert Winia of Floater, for Nate and Andy, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
I'm going to take this time to introduce
the most fucking fire shit ever.
Who made it? I go by the name of Shamana. Get up. Make yourself 100 racks. Get up off your ass. Make yourself 100 racks. Make yourself 100 racks. 100 racks. Get up off your ass. Make yourself 100 racks. Get up off your ass. Make yourself 100 racks.
Glass that you were drinking.
It was whiskey coke.
I was gonna say, and you smoked like 4 joints. Let's see.
Like a normal Tuesday.